back again for another exciting, wonderful series. And it's my great joy and privilege to welcome you back as we continue the exploration of how we, as people of committed faith, can find the common courage to stand in the face of overwhelming challenges of our times. Given the urgency of these seemingly unsurmounted problems in our world today, we devoted our studies of last year by dipping into the stream of the wisdom tradition within the contemplative Christianity taught by Cynthia Bourgeau. This path is taught by Jesus is the means of transforming human consciousness. This was followed by our winter study as we glimpsed into the nature of sin and evil, and how these wisdom practices can transform consciousness into the evolutionary leap that is needed at this time. We've been drawn this fall to heed the call of Sister Joan Chittister as we find our own uncommon courage through this stance of transform consciousness in order to speak out and act with courage, honesty, and authority when confronted with that which would diminish life on this planet. I'm pleased this morning to introduce our inaugural speaker, Heather Roos, who has become a cherished friend of Word and Life with her presence and wisdom teachings. She brings to us a wealth of experience as one of Cynthia Bourgeau's senior wisdom teachers with a background in psychology, organic intelligence, and embodiment of her deep spiritual work and teachings. We are grateful this morning to have her introduce this important topic as we explore how we each can make a choice to answer the call to uncommon courage with a transformed consciousness. And now we're pleased to welcome her. And would you please raise your hands in greeting as we offer our blessing to Heather.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much, Marianne and Tim and Judith. And hello, everyone. It's good to see some familiar faces and some new ones as we start off this series, which, as Mary Ann mentioned, is in many ways a follow-up and a continuation of the exploration from last year, but is also in and of itself its own study with the intention of how do we stand with authority in the face of all that is happening in our world right now. And this invitation to find the inner voice of authority really in the heart, our organ of spiritual seeing and knowing, the only place where true authority can come from, and to stand in that authority, which will inevitably, if it truly is coming from the heart, be clear and objective and compassionate, and to be able to take prudent action from that authority, anchored in our deeper self rather than our ego or personality alone. So as we support this invitation, we're diving into Joan Chittister's book, The Time Is Now, A Call to Common Courage. As we begin, I just want to start us off with a simple practice, bringing our attention to the name of this book. Before ever even opening it to read what was inside, I was pretty struck with the simple but potent title, The Time Is Now, A Call to Uncommon Courage. So I'd like us to just pause and spend a moment or longer in a sort of Lectio Divina, divine reading of this title. And as I read the title, I'll read it many or several different times. And I just invite you to notice in deepening ways how you experience those words. So as I say them, just notice what happens in your mind as you hear these words. What do these words mean to you? The time is now. A call to uncommon courage. The time is now. A call to uncommon courage. Just take a moment in silence to notice what happens in your mind. What do these mean to you? Letting them go deeper and deeper. And hearing them again. As you hear them again, I'll say them again. Notice how these words are striking you, what you notice with your emotions. What does it stir in you as you hear these words? I'll read them, we'll take a pause, and then I'll ring the bell again. The time is now. A call to uncommon courage. The time is now, a call to uncommon courage. What happens? How do they strike you? How do they speak to you? What emotions do they bring up? And I'll say them again, allowing them to go deeper and become aware of what you notice in your body, what sensations arise, what does this evoke in your posture or your gestures? The time is now. A call to uncommon courage. The time is now, a call to uncommon courage. And allowing all of that which has emerged in your mind, emotions, meaning in your body, to just rest in your heart for a moment. How these words are speaking to you at this time in your life. I'm guessing they touch into whatever it is that brought you here to this space. So as a way of weaving us together in this exploration, I just want to invite you to unmute yourself and maybe speak a word or a phrase into the space, something that you noticed as you let the title of this book go deeper in you. And if you speak at the same time as somebody else, just pause and then you can say it again. So feel free to just unmute yourself.
Restless.
Do something.
Pure honesty.
Urgency.
Reach out.
Now.
Calm readiness.
Focus.
Accept.
Dependence on the divine.
Dependence on the divine. Any others?
Courage.
Called.
Can't wait any longer.
Here we are with a group of people who cares about this planet and the state of reality that we're in right now and feels called to, in the words of Cynthia Bourgeau, hold a post in some way, to listen to what uncommon courage may look like for you, for us, now. So let's begin with where, as humans, we are situated. From a Christian wisdom tradition perspective, we can recognize that we stand inwardly and outwardly between two worlds. This physical world, which is often named as the horizontal, this physical world that we live in, all the day-to-day elements of our lives, our responsibilities, tending to our physical being, all our relationships, everything of this physical world, and then this world beyond, which is often thought of as the vertical realm or the kingdom of heaven or the imaginal realm. So we have these two worlds that we live in, and the Christian tradition and other traditions in the West would say that they intersect at the level of the heart, that organ of spiritual seeing. So I just invite you to open your arms wide right now and take a moment to sense into that. Opening your arms wide, acknowledging the horizontal in your life, whatever that may be. Just noticing. What are the struggles, both in your immediate life or that you're aware of, on this horizontal? Just honoring those in this space, as we'll be in a way holding them together, tending to them together. And then when you're ready, bringing your arms up above you, acknowledging God's kingdom or kingdom, acknowledging the imaginal realm or that which is beyond this world but is ever saturating and infusing this world. And then as you're ready, acknowledging that they intersect here right at the heart. And I don't mean emotion, but as is thought in the wisdom tradition, the heart is our organ of spiritual seeing and hearing and knowing, that the sacred is embedded in everything, that there's no separation of the spiritual and the profane, and we can learn to tune ourselves to the heart and to know what this instrument is trying to, how this instrument is trying to guide us. So within each one of us exists this place where the two worlds meet. And we can learn, and we have learned, and many of you have probably spent your life learning how to navigate that space where the two worlds exist and meet, and to be a bridge here in the horizontal, in our lives, of God's love and peace and all that is beyond this world. But in the book here, Joan Chittister also suggests that we live between two worlds here on the horizontal as well. And so she says we live between the world we were told would last and the world we're living in now, with all of the unrest, division, confusion, and toxicity. What many would call the breakdown of our current structure of consciousness. This is something that came up last series. The mental structure of consciousness being the way that we just naturally see the world. And this consciousness breaking down without the new structure of consciousness, the way we will see the world in the future, having fully dawned yet. And so we're in this reality of a lot of unrest and polarization and disturbed energy fields. All of this. This is, we can feel this. We know this, and we often probably get caught in it. All of that stuff that is our brain's natural tendency to focus on, all the things that are a struggle or, in a way, what's wrong. Modern neuroscience has revealed that our brain's tendency is to look at what's wrong, what isn't working, what isn't safe, etc., to protect ourselves, to close in, to do whatever we can to keep our human selves safe. And that's where our attention wants to stay, on all that's wrong, all that's hard, all that's chaotic, all that is not, that feels broken and isn't working, which has been very helpful for our species survival. And at the same time, we know that what we put our attention on grows. So as we focus on that alone, that can cause things to inflame, can become detrimental, and then we become just like the world that we're trying to bring some other perspective to. And Joan Chittister also, she calls us citizens of the world and says that we live in a landmine of differences. And it's also important to note that humans, along with our biology, are no longer surrounded exclusively by others who look or think or believe like we do. And this is a stretch for the human nervous system, which tends to register this as dangerous as well. On the other hand, in this world that we live in, we are so much more connected in many ways, which can bring a sense of the reality of our interconnectedness and an appreciation of all that's unique in each expression of the divine. And to use some of Gebser's words, Gebser being the main person who talks about these structures of consciousness, how each unique expression of the divine springs forth from the same origin. So here we are, situated between all these worlds, this world and the world beyond, and then this world that we have been told is, and what this world actually is, surrounded by increasing complexity, which includes both beauty and struggle. And to come back to Cynthia Bourgeau, Episcopal priest and wisdom teacher, along with many others, she suggests we're here for a purpose and to be a part of the flow of not only receiving from the kingdom of heaven or the vertical, but also offering ourselves back, offering our lives back to the world and back to God. And she even says we're part of a cosmic scale with a destiny to become cosmic transformers, intended to mediate between this visible sphere and the invisible sphere by surrendering our survival and our pleasure impulses. This is the classic realm of spiritual work. We find contentment when we are aligned at the level of the heart. And so part of being human is to recognize ourselves as a responsible part of an intricate web of interconnectivity. We're not here for our personal enlightenment or gain, or simply to receive peace or patience or goodness or whatever. We are here to, yes, receive, but also to generate and transmit the fruits of the Spirit, like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, and as Cynthia would suggest, other virtues, including mercy, trust, forgiveness, strength, and courage, to cultivate and nurture and grow and feed the planet with them. So often our spiritual path becomes part of a personal self-improvement process or an other improvement process, according to what our personality preferences dictate. But saying yes to our role as humans, if we take that on, to be a conscious, in a way, cosmic servant, if we take that on, we stay rooted and grounded in our hearts, where, as Cynthia said, the heart's primary function is to look beyond the obvious, the boundaries, the surface of things, and see into a deeper reality emerging from some unknown profundity, which plays lightly upon the surface of this life without being caught there. A world where meaning, insight, and clarity come together in a whole different way. So as we engage this exploration with Joan and others, it's important that we are rooted in the heart, because it is the heart that helps us to mediate between the realms and give us guidance as we live situated here and try to face with integrity all the current challenges that are at hand. That's why it's also so essential that we have some kind of practice, some kind of teaching, and some kind of community like this that keeps us in line with this spiritual organ, so we're not operating from ego and personality alone and can come into coherence with the heart of God. The heart of God, which our human heart as a spiritual organ is a portal to. And it's from this heart that we understand what uncommon courage even is, or what our role as humans is to be. So on page 13 in our book here, Joan says, "The future depends on whether we make serious decisions about our own roles in shaping a future that fulfills God's will for the world. or simply choose to suffer the decisions made by others intent on imposing their own vision of tomorrow. The future depends on whether we make serious decisions about our own roles in shaping a future that fulfills God's will for the world, or simply choosing to suffer the decisions made by others intent on imposing their own vision of tomorrow. We have this sense of responsibility to do this, right? To take up a role in shaping the future and not just let go so that chaos and polarization and all that's going on be what shapes the way of the future. And we have the privilege to choose whether to be a conscious cosmic participant, contributing to and nurturing that which supports this planet and all which occupies it. We have the privilege to choose how we want to show up in this world. And it's easy to forget that we're citizens of more than this world. And we can be a pretty decent human being, even in that state of forgetfulness. So we remember and we help each other remember that we are rooted and grounded in something beyond this world that can help us to stand more stably and not get caught in all of the fear and anger and everything that is making up so much of the interactions these days. And when we're faced with this choice of how to show up in the world, Joan Chittister does suggest three different choices. So as continuing on page 13 there, she talks about three choices. The first is that we can quit a road that's going somewhere we don't want to go, or simply move in a direction and another direction and distance ourselves from the difficulties of it all. I'm guessing there are many situations where we have made that choice to just quit and go in a different direction. Sometimes that is the choice that is needed, especially if we don't feel that we can stay connected to our heart and hear the voice of authority that comes from there in that situation. And then we have the second choice that she talks about, which is that we can surrender to the forces of resistance that attempt to obstruct our every step toward wholeness, or to give in to the fatigue and go quietly into our comfortable spaces with others like us and hunker down and wait for the storm to pass. And so there may be times we've noticed that that's what we've done. It just feels like too much. The forces of resistance are too strong, and we don't have the energy or the inner stability to stand firm in it. And so there are times when we give in to that fatigue and then pull back and go into our safe space, our the place that we feel protected in, where we don't have to be uncomfortable. And we hunker down, we gather those who think like us, look like us, view the world like us, and sometimes can even become an echo chamber there, and just almost like put our head in the sand like an ostrich and wait for the storm to pass. It's okay. Sometimes we make that choice, and yet I also invite you, as I'm saying these choices, just to notice what happens inside of you. I know for myself, when I think about that second choice, it doesn't feel in alignment with how I want to be in the world. And then we have this third choice that she talks about, and now I'm really paraphrasing here. It's to refuse to accept the lack of the spiritual fruit present in our midst, and insist on celebrating the coming of an unknown but surely, and I'm going to use the word a little differently, she says holier future, but I'm going to suggest a holier future, because in a way everything is holy as it is. We are already in the whole, and yet it's that paradox of being in the midst of fragmentation and division, and there is work for us to do, and we're not going to get to some perfect idealistic place in the future. But we can go steadfastly on, even if we're not sure what we're going to find at the end of it, and follow the prophets of old, as she suggests, echoing those who came before us, who spoke the voice of vision of God and the world. There's a risk here of not being heard at all, and also it demands that we stand somewhere deeper. It demands courage, that uncommon courage. And just to come back to something that Cynthia has said in regards to the fruit of the Spirit or courage, that they're not just nice ideas or even virtues the way that we understand them, but that every time we make space for these fruits or generate these fruits or allow them to move through, there's an energy that is being transmitted into this world that makes a difference to the collective, that makes, what are we feeding ourselves and the planet? Are we feeding the planet things like greed, like fear, like anger? Are we putting that into the environment, or are we putting in things like the fruits of the Spirit and other spiritual substances like trust, like forgiveness, like courage, like uncommon courage? And so that word uncommon really means we're talking about a courage that is not what we typically think of as courage. And I'd like to take a moment just to be with this notion of uncommon courage. And I find David White, author and poet, to talk a little bit about courage in a helpful way. And he suggests in his book, Consolations, The Solace, Nourishment, and Underlying Meaning of Everyday Words, that courage is a word that tempts us to think outwardly, to run bravely against opposing fire, to do something under besieging circumstances, and perhaps above all, to be seen to do it in public, to show courage, to be celebrated in story, rewarded with medals, given the accolade. But a look at its linguistic origins leads us in a more interior direction and toward its original template, the old Norman French core or heart. So we come back to this idea of the heart. Courage is the measure of our heartfelt participation with life, with another, with a community, a work, a future. To be courageous is not necessarily to go anywhere or do anything except to make conscious those things we already feel deeply, know deeply, see deeply, and then to live through the unending vulnerabilities of those consequences. To be courageous is to seek our feelings deeply in the body. And I don't mean our, again, this isn't just our personality's emotional landscape, there's a deeper feeling that we can experience in the body and with a clear mind to be there in our heart, in the world, to live up to and into the necessities of relationships that often already exist, with things we find we already care deeply about, with a person, a future, a possibility in society, or with an unknown that begs us on and always has begged us on. So whether we stay or whether we go, to be courageous is to stay close to the way we are made. And if we think back to what we are made as transformers. We are made to be in service of both of these worlds. And so as we consider uncommon courage, and as we continue to go through this book, we are, in a way, immersing ourselves in the presence of uncommon courage and some of these other substances. We are understudying them. We are, in a way, hoping to consciously absorb and consume courage. We are what we eat, as Cynthia Bourgeau often reminds us, and really speaks to this idea that we can both imitate from the inside uncommon courage and surround ourselves with examples of these substances. And that's what this series is a practice in doing, in immersing ourselves in the presence of and learning from and surrounding ourselves with examples of this kind of uncommon courage, in order that we might live more from that uncommon courage as prophets. And so, coming back to Joan in this book, she's suggesting that not only can we look to the prophets of every age for guidance, but that we all have an inner prophet, and that we are currently in a time when the world is in wait for wise and wild voices to lead us back to spiritual sanity. And so the question for all of us, the choice we have in front of us, is will we take up our spiritual responsibility to bring the kingdom of heaven, the world beyond here, now? Will we be prophets who speak the truth to a culture of lies, living out our path rather than just talking about it? Which is not easy. We know that's not easy. Sometimes it's a lot easier to stay in our comfort zones and to not take risks. I think it's also probably important to note that courage doesn't mean the lack of fear. We probably all know that by now, but courage often is knowing what we need to do and what we're called to do from the heart, from that inner place, and doing it with the fear, doing it with the anxiety. So we're talking about living in this world, but not of it, as Jesus says, to continue to go on sowing the fruit of the Spirit, the path of love, and choosing to walk the path of love, which in a lot of ways is terrifying because it requires us to die before we die. One of those key spiritual principles, which really is dying to our egoic self in time. I'm not using that as a negative term, but just that which lives here on the horizontal, our personality. Whenever we die to our programs for happiness, as Thomas Keating talks about, letting go of needing power, control, safety, security, affection, esteem to keep us happy and content. Whenever we let those go, whenever we move beyond our nervous systems, fight and flight and freeze, and I'm not also talking about those necessary fight, flight and freeze responses we need. We need those, but they're so often left over from traumatic experiences. Whenever we can see beyond that and drop into a deeper place within ourselves and continue to keep God and our place at the center, we experience a little death. And so here we are, we're talking about being in this world differently in the midst of the storm until something new takes shape, and being a prophet. So Joan also talks about how prophets do support tradition while being wary of traditionalism. They care about seeing the sacred and the profane, understanding the cries of the humanity. There's definitely this risk of being shunned socially, ridiculed, ignored, canceled, but they're anchored somewhere else and do what they must regardless of outcome. They are more committed to the ways of God, to the ways of the heart, than to social approval, fidelity, to the system, pain in the present, old answers, all those other things. They are willing to die to those human obsessions in a way. And they have rhythms and practices in place that keep them aligned with the heart. I think that's important to name, that there are practices and rhythms that those who walk this path and want to live it in their life more fully do. And I think there's a lovely quote from Henry Nouwen in his book, In the Name of Jesus, Reflections on Christian Leadership, that speaks to the importance of practice and rhythms to stay aligned with the heart, to do what it is that Joan is inviting us to do. And he says, through the discipline of contemplative prayer, Christian leaders have to learn to listen again and again to the voice of love and to find there the wisdom and courage to address whatever issue presents itself to them. Dealing with burning issues without being rooted in a deep personal relationship with God easily leads to divisiveness because, before we know it, our sense of self is caught up in our opinion about a given subject. But when we are securely rooted in personal intimacy with the source of life, it will be possible to remain flexible without being relativistic, convinced without being rigid, willing to confront without being offensive, gentle and forgiving without being soft, and true witnesses without being manipulative. The Bible is full of examples of ordinary people being called to leadership in a way, or called to hold a post, called to something bigger than themselves in seemingly big ways and also in seemingly small ways. People who've committed themselves to this path in their little corner of the universe, which is what I invite all of us to do as we start this series, is think about our own little corner of the universe, because our own little corner of the universe is not our own, but is connected to the entire universe. We know this. Quantum physics is talking about this all the time. So our call is to stay awake to the heart, to the times we're in, and to continue to heal the past and to prepare for the future. healing the past by bringing unintegrated resources for individual and collective trauma, and preparing for the future by standing firm in our heart from a place of authority beyond the ego, and from clear seeing from that place, being able to see what's needed in a given situation, see what's missing, and be willing to be a bridge to what may be needed. And that may happen explicitly through words and actions, or implicitly through presence. There's no one way to do this. And so listening to the heart is incredibly important, so that we know what is ours to do and to say yes with that uncommon courage. I want to close us with coming back to Joan's words on page 1. So I'm just going to read these through. It's a little bit long, but just allow whatever speaks to you to speak to you. Let the words wash over you, and you can always come back to this. So hear these words spoken to you, in dedication to you. She says, "In all my years of traveling around the world, one thing has been present in every region, everywhere. One thing has stood out and convinced me of the certain triumph of the great human gamble on equality and justice. Everywhere there are people who, despite finding themselves mired in periods of national darkness or personal marginalization, refuse to give up the thought of a better future or give in to the allurements of a deteriorating past. They never lose hope that the values they learned in the best of times, or the courage it takes to reclaim their world from the worst of times, are worth the commitment of their lives. These people, the best of ourselves, are legion, and they are everywhere. It is with unwavering faith, the open hearts, and the piercing courage of people from every level of every society that carries us through every major social breakdown to the emergence again of the humanization of humanity. In every region, everywhere, they are the unsung but mighty voices of community, high-mindedness, and deep resolve. They are the prophets of each era who prod the rest of the world into seeing newly what it means to be fully alive, personally, nationally, and spiritually. It is to these average but courageous people who forever seek the truth, defend the weak, bring the peace, and always, always, always stand up to protest injustice. It is you that I dedicate this book." So as we head into the reflection time, Tim will put some questions in the chat box. You're invited to share what drew you here to this series to explore this topic of spirituality in action. To share what you currently understand uncommon courage to mean, and also to begin to articulate what arena of life you're feeling invited to step into from a place of uncommon courage to do the truth and to hold the tensions that divide us in life-giving ways that allow cooperation and healing to emerge. I will say one thing that came up in our group and I think is important to name, and that is that so often that uncommon courage finds its way through us, both through our gifting as humans, whatever that may be, but also through our lived experience around pain. And so often our own pain or the pain of those closest to us awakens us to a need or a place where we find ourselves in an arena where we are now stepping out to do the truth and to live our spirituality in action. But yeah, I would love to hear what some of you have discovered in your small groups or any understanding of uncommon courage or arenas you're drawn to.
I would like to just say that when I was thinking about this, the courage part, I tend to shy away from confrontation and consider myself a cowardly lion kind of, person. But it was hopeful to think that, well, at least maybe I'm a lion, so I can roar, and that there is some hope in that. So that's what I'm hoping that the series will help me, bring out my roar a little bit more.
I love that, Karen. Just wanting to allow your roar to come forth and be of service to God. That's beautiful.
Who else? Anybody else got a hand up or something to offer? Yeah, Ingrid, do you want to unmute and go ahead?
Well, I am just struck about, more deeply anyway, about courage coming from the heart and not from the ability to argue or to stand up for yourself or to speak clearly, but just to listen and to love. And I think the wisdom series that we did before this just blends so well into what we're talking about now.
Thank you for that reflection, Ingrid. I think that's so essential, because uncommon courage really does have to arise from the heart. And it's not our typical human notions of courage. And we were talking about that a little bit as well in our group, that that courage is courage. And when we stand and in that authority in the heart, and we do or say or be what we're called to be in any given moment, that offers courage to the situation and to the world, no matter whether it looks big and grandiose on the outside or not, that it's still courage and it makes a difference.
On that same vein, I find it maybe not so courageous, but it is talking and inviting other people to talk of nationalities and peoples that I don't know anything about, and really wanting to know more. I guess it's because I was an anthropologist in college, but I just love cultural anthropology and learning more about people's backgrounds. And one day I was walking, around the track, and this woman was just sitting there meditating. So finally I said, "Come up, you should walk with me." Little did I know, 30 years later, we'd still be friends, but she's from India. And listening to her life when she was a 17-year-old bride, and having then to work for the husband of that family for 17 years, feeding them every day. And here I am, a young girl in Haprow, Pennsylvania, American girl. And I keep thinking, how can two worlds come together that are so different and yet be such good friends? And it's that kind of thing I really love learning about, where we all come from and what we've had to overcome. So, but I talk to a lot of people because I like to do that.
Thank you, Barbara. And just that, the willingness to courageously reach out to this person that perhaps you wouldn't have normally done. And Jackie, I see your hand there.
I was really struck by someone in our chat group, elderly, as so am I, and most of us, and not in very good health. We were talking about courage and standing up and speaking out for yourself and where are our causes. And she is not in a condition to be able to do that. And she said, very humbly, I don't do anything much, but I just treat the people I disagree with great kindness. And I thought, my golly, if the whole world were run that way, there wouldn't be any need for that kind of courage. If we all could just learn to be kind. And that's getting harder and harder in our political scene. We don't see people speaking across the aisles anymore. Different parties are now enemies instead of adversaries. There's no kindness left.
That's such a great example, Jackie, of, you know, yeah, our world is starving for things like kindness, for substances, to use Cynthia's word, substances of kindness, the fruit of the spirit, for peace, for joy, for gentleness, for, you know, all of these things. And it is stretching us, I often say, to become wider than the divisions, wider than the polarizations, the fragmentations, to be willing to not just get caught up in and identified with one side or the other, but to widen out around and see what's needed. You know, can I bring kindness in this situation? That's an act of courage too. Thank you.
Oops, sorry, I see Kathy, you have a hand up over there.
I just wanted to say it. Listening to everybody made me think about, you know, how when you're trying to conserve, say, water, and you think, you know, what you do is so little. But I often think, well, if every person did a little, it would make a huge difference. And I think it's the same thing with these acts of courage. No matter how little what you might say or do or how you might treat somebody seems little, but if everybody did that, it would make a huge difference in the world.
And doesn't it make your day better when says something nice to you or something, you know, and it encourages you to maybe be a little nicer to the next person you meet, you know?
Well, yeah, you bring up that whole dimension of, you know, the impact of receiving often touches that within ourselves that wants to extend that back out. Looks like we have another minute or two if there's anybody else who has any reflections.
And I think it must take great courage to go on when you're in great pain or physically you have problems and you have to, you know, try to find some joy in everyday life. Just the courage to keep going on. And I see that in a lot of people that must be very difficult.
Yeah. I think that's also a really good point, Barbara. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jane.
I was having a short discussion with, I think, a couple of my kids. We were talking about checker at the grocery store and how they have the machines. You don't have to use a checker. And I said, that's too bad because there is no interaction there. And it's so what if you stand in line? I mean, maybe there are times when you simply can't spend 5 minutes more, but it's another case of a machine replacing a human interaction. And I myself see that small thing as being important. So that's all. I will never check out my groceries by the machine, I say.
Thank you, Jane. Yeah, just an example of maybe being countercultural and choosing the more uncomfortable or the more inconvenient at times thing in service of a relational connection. Thank you.
Right. If no one else has any lingering comments, I would love to invite Mary Ann to unmute and close us out for the morning.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Wow, what a beautiful morning. Rich teachings. My heart is just filled from all of you. And Heather, thank you for this beautiful, beautiful introduction and sharing from your heart. What I'm going to take away is the idea of finding our inner voice of courage and the authority from our heart. And if we can have that stance, won't this be a better world? So thank you. Thank you for those words. So now we're going to be looking forward to our second week of discussion, and we will bring on a video with Joan Chittister as she discusses this seminal call to courage. So please, in preparation, read chapters 1 and 2 on risk and paradox as you listen with your heart to this invitation to act with integrity and courage to the challenges of our times. And also remind your friends, if they haven't joined us, there's room at the table for everyone. This is a really, really important study. We are called during this time to act from our hearts. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary Ann. And everybody will receive the notice of the recording of this session. It's going to be probably put up maybe Sunday. We'll give you that information. The link is recurring. So the one you got today is the one that's going to last the whole time. But for those of us who can't find it in the innards of the computer, I'll send it out every week. And one more thing, the steering committee, if you remember, we have a meeting right after this meeting, steering committee. So you'll receive the link, another link in a few minutes. All right. Thanks, Tim. Thank you, everybody. Yes, Tick, unmute. Unmute yourself and say goodbye to everybody. Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you, Heather.
Bye.
Thank you.